blood and thunder and going in for tackles that you wouldn't normally go in for.
I try and like want to go in, like my wife's English, the kids are having, but I just can't.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
Oh, time for the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Right, the performance rankings, before we get into Owen's... you haven't been as bullishly confident about these as you have been about other rankings that you do, most perfectly correct, but that's probably because...
They are most perfect and correct. It's too hard to kind of compare this with that, isn't it?
Well...
Apples and oranges.
Every Monday morning here on OTBM, we give you the chance to win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do is send in your suggestions to us. You can do them in the Instagram channel, you can leave them on YouTube, you can tweet us at Off The Ball. You tell us who's red, who's amber, who's green, and you could win. We'll announce the winner before the end of the show. It's on YouTube or on our Instagram channel. Right, winner pick before 9:30. Who is red, amber, and green this week, Owen?
The good, the bad, the grand. We'll start with the bad. And first up there, as you can see, the first name on the sheet is England in the bad after their performance against Scotland on Friday. This general sense of everything is fine, kind of invading the... comments from the camp, invading the media, even I think if you've been watching a lot of BBC and ITV over the past couple of days, that everything is definitely fine. And there was like a moment on Saturday night in the BBC studio where Rio Ferdinand and Michael Richards were like, and Gary Lineker, in fairness, it was a three-man debate, kind of tossing up ideas about what actually went wrong for England on Friday night, kind of mulling over this national disgrace of drawing with a nation like Scotland. And you had Jurgen Klinsmann in the middle of all of them just laughing at them, being like, you guys are going to be fine. But I'm not sure if Jurgen Klinsmann is actually right in this occasion. I think that the sense of worry that actually might be, that might have seeped in when that mask slipped on Saturday night a little bit, when these three lads started to actually debate what had gone wrong, rather than being like, look, listen, 4 points, happy days. I think that actually might be kind of closer to the truth, that there is a sense in this England camp right now that they just have not shown up to this tournament with the level of performance that they've gotten at times in qualification and even in the Nations League. And this very hard to nail down thing about why England can't show up at major tournaments is coming right back to the fore again, when they seem to have done a lot of things quite right in the build-up.
And quite right in the tournament so far. Why are they suddenly being absolutely... So many people waiting in the long grass to kill England, right? I think that... How much of your analysis is you just absolutely loving the fact that they draw with the country they own? How much of it is down to like,
look at that? Not at all. You made this argument last week as well, that it was some like post-colonial argument. When actually, no. If you look at a team that are second favourites...
Can you unbake the inferiority complex? Just take those ingredients out and then give me your raw, subjective...
Objective. For people
who aren't
familiar with the show, I was born in London. I used to have an English accent myself. I am the biggest tan going. Let's put that out there this morning.
Okay. We're getting somewhere. Come on.
So this is purely on a footballing level. So you actually think that this is going well for England? You thought that they were really great against
Scotland.
Croatia.
Scotland were good. That's the problem. Like, Scotland have a load of really good players who played really well in that game, showed up for like this biggest game of their lives. Look at the difference in performance from Scotland's first game to their second game, right? And check and see what the difference between the performance that they were able to put in. And then you put that against England, who have to hold that off. And if John Stones isn't John Stones and sticks that header in like every other centre-back in world football would have done, with a free header from 2 yards out, okay, 6 yards out, whatever it was, right? But essentially, it was like the easiest header you're ever going to have in his career. If he doesn't just clatter it off the angle of upright and crossbar, then I think England are going to win that game pretty easy. Because I think I think they're giving a sucker an even break. And at that point, you can see Scotland going, right, we've got our break, here we go. And so I think this is just a game in a tournament that when we look back on it, I think England is a couple of things, right? Jack Grealish comes off the bench. Jack Grealish has to start the next game. Over the course of these three games, he's accidentally going to find his best and most aggressive starting 11. And I think that there has to be some kind of come to Jesus moment for Gareth Southgate, where he's like, maybe being a defensively sound and very boring team isn't the best way to win the tournament, because actually our players are a little bit behind where the French team are, or where the Portugal team was 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And our best bet is to be England as opposed to some kind of weird simulacrum of these other teams. And also he changed the fullbacks. I don't know why he changed the fullbacks. That was just listening to the public. He's like, oh, I'm going to play all my fullbacks because I brought them all and I have to justify myself. So I think that, like, this is really strange.
They played really well.
Scotland played really well.
You're really, like, I think what's actually notable here is the effort to which you're going to defend. You're finding ways to defend this England performance rather than actually analysing what you've seen. Like, this, I mean, nobody at home needs me to deconstruct your argument there. If England had taken a 1-0 lead, it would have been a different game. That's how football works. You don't score your goals. You don't execute your opportunities. And of course, you're not going to win games. So, like, we can live in the fanciful if you want.
No,
I'm going to believe that Kevin Kilbane scored that rebound and we got to a quarter final in 2002.
Oh, poor Kevin Kilbane, sitting in the corner of the studio, suddenly bodied by you out of nowhere, Owen. Like, okay, fair enough. Okay.
I'm going to believe that Lee Keegan's GPS hit Lee Keegan, Dean Rock's football that time, and Dublin don't do four in a row. Like, we can absolutely invent things if you want to do that this morning.
My point is that England are still a bit fragile. They are definitely a bit mentally weak at the moment. But I'm not saying that a nil-all draw in a derby game against a very talented side, like Scotland, completely written off here. Like, loads of really good players in that team. Tierney was sensational. Robertson was sensational. McGinn played as well as he can play. And, like, there's no reason for England to brush that team aside. There just isn't. And particularly in international football. And, okay, England definitely have problems, but not the amount of problems that your inferiority complex is suggesting here.
What is the expectation for this England team? I would have thought that as
semi-finals, like they're going to have to beat a good team.
There you go. I would be concerned about that. So I think therefore it looks, the evidence we have suggests that they are going to fall short of the expectation, and that's why they're in the bad. Like, it's nothing to do with me, I hate England, or this is a team to bash. They are one of the pre-tournament favourites, and they have underperformed as much as any of the other pre-tournament favourites. The only other kind of, like, big nation that you could say has been as disappointing, really, has been Spain. And Spain didn't have even the pre-tournament expectation that England have. Spain are a team for the future, England are a team for the now. And the now ain't looking too pretty as an England fan. Like, you've got Gareth Southgate coming out yesterday, essentially telling the press that Harry Kane is starting tomorrow night to shut the press up about speculating about whether or not Harry Kane's going to start tomorrow night. You've got Raheem Sterling coming out saying everything is fine in the camp, and in fairness, Raheem Sterling is put out and he's just the man on the firing line. But, like, he says stuff like, Scotland was a different type of test and I felt we got drawn into their style of play. The sort of excuse that, like, I mean, these cavemen came along and brought us down to their level. Like, it was back to front. It is not very often you'll get that at international level. Like, the bang of Thomas Delaney describing Ireland as opening a tin of beans with your bare hands about those Raheem Sterling comments. Again, any other English player probably would have said the exact same thing, but it's indicative of what they're saying to each other in the camp, I feel. And this just doesn't... This does not say to me that this is a winning environment or a team that is about to become a winning environment. Maybe I'll be wrong. Their players are absolutely good enough to go and win this thing. But what we've seen from the first two games, first of all, a very mediocre performance against a terrible team, like a really terrible, not a terrible team, but a terrible performance from Croatia. And then against an OK Scotland side, they were poor. And that's what we're judging it on now. And sure, we can get into the idea of what sort of happiness levels we're getting from seeing England underperform.
What kind of
I'm dealing in facts here.
What kind of happiness levels are you getting as a manager just from watching?
You know what? Actually, not a whole pile. Like, I do think that this bunch of England players, and, like, we've had this conversation a lot of times over the last 3 years, I think since Southgate and Russia in 2018, this is genuinely a likable bunch of players. So it is hard to have the classic sort of begrudgery around them. And I do think that the classic begrudgery, certainly from my perspective, always came down to the fact that there was this cocksure swagger about them going into every tournament. And you just kind of wanted to see them brought down a peg or two, whereas this England team are quite humble, it seems, and you don't really have that same sense of joy when they don't do well. It would be nicer if they were maybe a little worse people or something like that, then we could perhaps get behind Scotland.
You can always find people in the media who are against them or for them who can inspire that level of schadenfreude for you if you want. But look, I don't know, I just think that a lot of the analysis is definitely coloured by like, I actually think that it's hard to take a game like the Scotland game in isolation, and I thought that they won the Croatia game. Like, so they've won one, they've played against a deep, bitter rival, and they're unbeaten, and they have yet to concede a goal.
Yeah, the not conceding a goal thing is definitely a positive. Like, I and maybe if they get into a last 16 against... it's hard to know which of those teams would be the best matchup for them at the moment. I just think that England, if they get into a situation where the opponent are dominating possession, we actually might see a much better England version. We might actually see Harry Kane as the spearhead of a counter-attacking team, for example, and all of a sudden they're scoring two or three goals in a game and away they go. Maybe this is just a bad scenario for them to be in where they are dominating possession and they've got to come up with the ideas. Maybe they're a little bit better if they're... If they're submitting a little bit more to the opponent. And like as we're seeing in the group of death, there have been just like a couple of really interesting, outcomes when the game's actually played out tactically, and maybe England would just be a little bit better not having to take the game to the opponent. But then again, they're at home for the whole thing about a quarter final, so maybe it will be up to them to take the game to the opponent in every situation.
Yeah, they've caved on all the final demands to UEFA as well, so the final's definitely going to be in England if they qualify. Is there anything else? Is there anything about Harry Maguire? Is there anything about Bellingham? Like, could the team be recast at this point, or is it too late?
As maybe a three at the back? Like, could we potentially...
Would that be the problem, answering their problems, or would that be, like, doubling down on the... hey, look!
Maybe, actually, yeah. You asked me for solutions to the... Like, it does seem to me that the three at the back was thrown out with Harry Maguire's injury. Pre-tournament, that before the tournament, everybody was like, well, it's obviously going to be three at the back. And maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold's injury impacts that somewhat as well. You would kind of like to see Reece James Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier or Reece James on the same side of a defence, for example. Maybe either Luke Shaw or Chilwell as a more advanced left wing back at that moment, and maybe you don't necessarily need the three in the midfield. You can have the two holding midfielders at that point, or even have Mason Mount and one of Calvin Phillips or Declan Rice, and that might solve a few problems. I don't know. I'm not convinced by my own argument here, but maybe Harry Maguire comes back in and is just the totemic leader that they need.
And maybe it's his big giant forehead at the end of that chance that goes to Stones, and he scores that because he's not John Stones. I realise Stones had a great season, but Stones had a great season playing in a completely different team, and I'd have him out on my side at this stage. And anyway, I'm always interested, what would the England team that Pep Guardiola would pick with this group of players at the moment, and how would they play football? What would the difference be? I think that...
They picked Sancho, probably?
Well, yeah, and you can see that maybe he wouldn't... I don't know. I'd be very interested to see if they're genuinely in the market for an out-and-out striker the way everybody says they are at the moment, or if actually Pep has decided that football is best played where you've got five or six players over the course of a season who are going to score 10 to 15 goals for you. And in the England side, in an international team, what would that look like? Can you fit Grealish and Foden into the same team and both of them playing in something close to their preferred position? And what all of a sudden... Does that unleash this incredible waves of creativity? And you know, you can't plan for them as the opposition. So I don't know, an interesting thought experiment.
What did you make of Jack Grealish and the Stephen O'Donnell thing? Your beloved Jack Grealish getting sledged in the most beautiful way by his opponent.
Whispered sweet nothings. For anybody who didn't see this, Stephen O'Donnell. I mean, it's going to be an interesting training session when they go back the first time. McGinn told him what to do. He told him that you can get in his head by complimenting him, not by giving him crap. So he was like, oh, you have beautiful calves. Such big, beautiful calves. You're so talented. Wow, look at the size of your calves. They're amazing. And you don't even shave them. He was like, weird, very particular detail. But brilliant, obviously. Genius.
How do you get your hair to look like that? If you're hearing that, you're a little bit put out. You're like, it's worse than the... I think for every player, I don't think it'll be just Jack Grealish. I think for every player, it's kind of worse to hear that from an opponent than to hear your crap, mate, because that just fires up most footballers, I'd imagine. But he was just getting sick of it at that stage. He was sick of running back Stephen O'Donnell, he said. And yeah, John McGinn sold his mate out and found out how to get at Jack Grealish. So there is your problem. Scotland are just really good at trash talking, as it turns out.
There's number five, England. We can fly through some of the rest of these.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of time, so we've still got another 10 minutes. If anybody has anything they want to get off their chest right now about your schadenfreude or your love of this English team, we'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number, or better still, you can leave a comment for us on the YouTube stream. Who else is in the red? We're still in the red.
Still in the red. I'm just going to stick France in here pretty quickly and move on. This is, again, quite... I think this is probably just a bit... It would probably come back to bite us a little bit more than England possibly putting France in here. This is just based on the draw against Hungary. I know it's you're going into a cauldron in Budapest, but... Like, if we want to be, if we want to revise history here completely and alter the entire thing, you could look back at that France-Germany game now and say to yourself, was there a little bit of an issue in how France didn't actually kill off that game? Granted, there was two very marginal offside calls and France maybe could win that game 3-0 on a different day. But the way in which they were going about going for the kill was very reactionary and it was... based on a counter-attack. And now, in fairness, if you've got Kylian Mbappe in your team, why wouldn't you try and counter-attack as much as possible and sort of venture into those open spaces with his ridiculous pace? But I just wonder, is that actually something to be concerned about? That there wasn't, after they went 1-0 up, that there wasn't a whole pile of, OK, let's control possession here a little bit more. Let's go through the phases here and let's break this team down. It was very much, OK, let Germany have the ball and let's hit them on the break. Maybe that's perfect. Maybe that's exactly what you should be doing in a 1-0 situation. But I just wonder, after what we've seen on Saturday, are there actually more holes to Deschamps' side than maybe met the eye against Germany?
I don't know. I can't tell. Like, this was the point I was making at the start of the show. A lot of this just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of this just seemed to be somehow international football has taken on the ability to not pay attention to the talent of the two teams, the form of the two teams up to this point, all of the context around the game, and suddenly for the games to be in and of themselves a single entity. I've never seen this before where... you're like, I know this is going to be a routine 3-0 win. Because that's what all of history tells you. And then all of a sudden, it's not. Is it the people in the stands? Is it this kind of, like, superpower of having fans? And I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that comes into it. I do think there was a little bit of Liverpool, the season just gone about France on Saturday, where they had far more shots than Hungary, but ended up having a similar number of shots on target as Hungary, that the quality of their... shot making and decision making was poor, and I think that's something that probably let Liverpool down quite a bit, and there was this massive drop off as a result of one very important statistic. And like, maybe you just get panicked in that sort of environment as well, where players maybe aren't used to this really intimidating atmosphere because they just haven't played in that sort of place for quite some time. Or maybe this is just the second game of the tournament, that they've got the 3 points against Germany and they know that Hungary are next up, lads. As long as we just don't get beaten here, we're going to be going through to the next round more than likely. So that is probably the more realistic expectation here, that France will come back to the level they were at maybe at times in that Germany game once they go up against Portugal the next day. But I just think that, again, like, maybe this tournament is just completely wild and there won't be a dominant team who will be perfect going all the way through, unless Italy win all their games and maybe Belgium as well. It just seems that if France are to be this this flawless team, that we couldn't pick any setback in pre-tournament, then I think a 1-1 draw with Hungary is a result that would make you reconsider that pretty swiftly, because this Hungary team aren't amazing. They've got this brilliant advantage in having a full stadium, but that's about as far as it goes.
Let's move on, because if ever there was a ranking in any of these rankings that we've ever done that betrayed you, Owen, that revealed your true character, it's this one. So England who drew and France who drew are in the red,
yeah,
which means bad.
Yeah.
Portugal are in the grand.
Yeah.
Portugal got annihilated 4-2.
Portugal got annihilated 4-2 and almost kind of came right back into the game. Yeah, you're pointing out the folly of my ways here, as if these are actually some sort of flawed rankings. How could you do that to me on a Monday morning? I think that, first of all, the quality of opposition here needs to come into play. England were playing Scotland, France were playing Hungary, Portugal were playing Germany. And
sound a bit like Raheem Sterling there, Ron, but go on.
Well, I mean, Germany, I don't know, I'd said pre-tournament that they might do something in that first game against France. If that France game was a game to watch, just watch out, don't write off these Germans just yet. And it didn't happen, and I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, okay, well, that was one of many, many bad takes. But in actual fact, what I should have just said was, watch out for Germany in this group, and they will do something in this group. And as it turned out, they did do something in this group, and they were phenomenal on Saturday in so many different ways. But one of the major reasons why they were phenomenal in so many different ways was that Portugal just didn't really seem to realise what was going on. And Santos, I don't know, like, was he just looking at one side of the pitch, or had he just like looked at Robin Gosens and said to himself, well, that guy is not somebody who's registered in our radar too much. He's managed to pop up on the left-hand side of the pitch, the back post, and that's fine. That's not going to happen too many more times in this match. And then it kept on happening and kept on happening, and Germany kept on getting in very repetitive ways. Now, in fairness, it looked as if Portugal were going to do the exact same thing, and it seemed that every goal that was scored in that game was somebody arriving late at the far post to tap in. And I just feel that the way they got hammered at the weekend is such a fixable thing. Maybe you blame the manager, maybe the manager doesn't have it in him to find his way out of those situations. But I think if you're looking at a team who have quality to go and win this thing, I would still absolutely have Portugal in that position. And I still think that there were just a multitude of different factors at play at the weekend in that crazy game that ensured that they lost. Like maybe it's because they've proven it at the very last Euros, but this is a team that can come back from a 4-2 defeat and absolutely be in the business end come the end of the tournament.
And a moment for Cristiano Ronaldo for the opening goal. Like, he didn't think he was onside. There was definitely it looked like there was a conflag with everybody, just pretend, let's keep going with this. They gave it, and I'm sure that you could have found a VAR armpit to disallow it if you wanted to. But in the meantime, as soon as he headers the ball from the corner, he knows his goal on. Like, it's, and the sprint is so spectacular.
Yeah.
I thought, like, because the elasticity is supposed to be gone from the jump. In the first game, there was a header that he couldn't quite reach the way we know he would have reached when he was 26 or 19. But that goal was like, wow.
Yeah, it was stunning. And like, even it felt at that point that there was just this great arrival even from Jota in this tournament. I know he like scores later in the game, but for me it was that moment where he just like squares the ball for Ronaldo, because in the previous game against Hungary, he obviously had that opportunity and he takes it himself, and Ronaldo eats him out of it. And like, that's just like this moment where you're like, Jota, what's the correct thing to do in this situation? And maybe he got a shot, and maybe that was the right thing to do against Hungary, but he learned his lesson, and he came back a few days later and was like, all right, my job as a teammate of Cristiano Ronaldo's is to pass the ball to Cristiano Ronaldo. And he did that on Saturday, and he thought, right, okay, Portugal have figured this thing out. Now, the problem is that they conceded 4 goals, which it would certainly lead to, is a bit of a drawback when you get a little bit excited by Jota squaring the ball for Ronaldo earlier on. But like, just figure out the fact that they've got wing-backs who are going to kill you. And if you play that game again in the morning, maybe if they realise that wing-backs exist and Kimmich is good at football as well as Gosens, then maybe this thing goes differently. I just think that there's a paper-thin difference between what looks like a really poor result for Portugal and what they could have come out of that game at, which might have been actually a positive result.
Okay, so they're in the grand. In the good, we have Italy and Germany.
Yeah. So we will start with Italy. Italy have just been sensational this tournament. I'm sure a lot of people have them as tournament favourites at this point. I think that when it comes to the Portugal conversation we just had, I do think that there is real credence in saying that Italy just haven't been properly tested yet. And that's nothing to do with Italy, it's to do with Portugal, and it's to do with the fact that they've properly been put up against it by Germany. And even on like a tactical level, to see what they will be up against in the knockout stages, Italy possibly haven't seen that yet, but it doesn't change the fact that they've been awesome. And like, I mean, they say time is undefeated, but I'm not sure if time has ever come up against Leonardo Bonucci. I know Chiellini is out at the moment, but I would say that he probably goes along the same lines. Like, I don't think David Myler will be singing on the final day of the tournament. I think Italy may win this tournament, but unfortunately our buddy Ciro Immobile might let us down. We really needed him to play and score last night for the Golden Boot. You need somebody to bully an opposition on the final day of a group stage. And the big step forward for Italy is that they played a second string team and didn't get stung by a Robbie Brady-esque header this time. So they've come so far in just 5 years.
And Germany?
Germany. Well, yeah, this comes back to what we were saying earlier on, that like, Germany are Germany. They have a collection of players that are good enough to beat a lot of teams around Europe, and maybe there was this massive overreaction last year to a game played in a vacuous stadium in a tournament that maybe not a lot of people care about, which was that 6-0 hammering against Spain. Maybe even reading into that could have been a sensible thing on the other hand, because you think to yourself, right, well, they've got a number of months to get this thing back on track. It did seem after the first game that you're looking at maybe like Hummels and Müller, even though they were pretty good, and you're like, are these guys the answer? Are these guys coming back actually? Is bringing them back a good idea when Löw initially thought that they weren't good enough to play international football anymore? These are the sort of reactive questions you ask yourself when you lose the first game of the tournament. And then after Saturday, the whole thing flips on its head and it's like Mats Hummels and Thomas Müller, absolutely the correct call to bring them back, because they are absolutely quality and they have at one period or another been some of the best players in Europe in their position. And okay, it all clicked lovely for them on Saturday.
We'll do more Germany talk a little bit later on this week. We'll do more Italian talk with James Horncastle in a moment. Obviously, this was a Euro special. We should have said that at the very start. We're going to do Euro specials, performance rankings for the duration of the tournament, which meant that there was no room for loads of other big people, big stories from the weekend. John Rahm would have been in the green, obviously. We'll talk about that with Nathan a little bit later on. Leona Maguire, bogey-free final round to finish second in America. This is her best finish on the PGA Tour so far. She should definitely have been in this, and would have been if we had been doing this normally, right?
Yeah, $214,000 was her payday from the weekend in Michigan. 13th now in the LPGA Order of Merit. And like, you don't want to tempt fate, but it looks like we're going to have an Irish player in the Solheim Cup this year.
And a future major winner right there. Yeah. Would Rory McIlroy have been in the red or the amber, in the amber? Like he competed. He's certainly making confident noises, saying that he got something from this week for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, definitely in the grand. I think that actually talking about a major Sunday and being really looking forward to a major Sunday with McIlroy involved felt odd and unusual in a brilliant way yesterday. Now, I think it was just this great prelude to what could have been a phenomenal finish yesterday, but obviously on the 11th and 12th hole for Rory, for Bryson, things just went a little bit south for them. Well, a lot south for them.
The Ireland Sevens team qualified for the Olympic Games.
Yeah, the most photogenic team in sport. I'm not sure, is it selfies they were taking on the back of the newspapers this morning, or if a photographer was there, but they're certainly looking happy, and like this incredible comeback as well in that win against France yesterday. 28-19 was the final score. They were 12-7 down.
I was going to make it, this is the first time that they've been relevant since Greg O'Shea. But he's back playing for them.
He's back playing for them, yeah. He's given up the
celebrity lifestyle.
The Love Island lifestyle, yeah, to go and play sevens rugby. And like, if people haven't seen the Billy Dardis interview at full time, go and check that out on social media. It's absolutely brilliant. Just talking about the turnover of players. Obviously, the sevens has been this, it's actually one of the success stories in a 15 sense when you think about like Robert Balakoon and Hugo Keenan. But if you're a sevens player, that's not a success story at all. You're like, you're taking all our best players, and all our best players are constantly are leaving. So you kind of need to strike while the iron is hot a little bit. Get players back from the influencer game maybe, and they've managed to maintain a level that's going to take them all the way to the Olympics. So they're in the top 12 teams in the world.
Well, at least they'll be ready for all the fame that is coming their way when they win gold. 3 minutes past eight this morning here on OTBM. Very busy show for you to come. That is your performance rankings this week.
OTBAM's performance rankings with Gillette. The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.